American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. A podcast of the shows can be found there. And go over to Facebook, give us a like. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter at kimmunson.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. So happy Monday. Producer Steve, did you have a good Father's Day?
Yes, it was it was good. It had its lighter moments, some lighter than others, but yeah, it was good.
Well, what, you said you had 15 pounds of brisket on this on the grill or something?
In the smoker. I made a tactical error, I guess, and I blame Sam's Club, but you know, let's not go there. It was all on me. Ultimately, it was all on me.
Okay. Well, gosh, I thought you were going to invite me over. So we live pretty close to each other. Very excited about this show that we have planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines. In studio with me is Alan Thomas. You know him. He's an author. He's a millennial. I don't know why we have to say that, but I think we do because millennials have kind of gotten a bad rap, I think.
Yeah, we kind of have, but, you know, I embrace it and do what I can with it.
Okay. So. Well, you've written a really important piece, Alan, and this is on the scary history of qualified immunity. And actually, I hadn't looked at it the way that you have talked about this. And let's see, I think it'll be on my website a little bit later today. So go to my website, kimmunson.com. But we're going to have an important conversation about this in segments 3 and 4. So that's the scary history of qualified immunity. So that'll be very interesting as well. Now, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do it. You should be able to persuade them. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, Steve's favorite, unpredictable and excessive taxation, or fear. And so we look at these, yes, as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And one of the ways, Alan, really, that we need to use critical thinking, and I think that there's a lot of people that are not using critical thinking these days. And we always talk about Rudyard Kipling. You know, he wrote The Jungle Book. And he says, I keep 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And I would say, in a way, you probably used some of those questions as you were starting to go through this history of qualified immunity.
Certainly. I mean, it's very easy to get emotional about some of these issues and have emotions dictate it. But at the same time, you have to step back and question the origins of some of these ideas and the consequences that ideas have.
It's very important, which that's a great segue into something exciting that's happening tonight. Ultimately, socialism has to come down to force. And my good friend Helen Raleigh, she immigrated from China, and Dr. Paul Prentice have put together a workshop last year at the Western Conservative Summit, 3 Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. So tonight we're having our first salon series, and we'll be featuring them over at Water's Edge Winery, and we are sold out.
That's amazing.
Yes. So that's, excuse me. It's a Monday morning here, Steve. And I want to say thank you to the team, to Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all that you do. And each of you listeners, you're each treasured and valued. And go out today and strive for excellence and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. But Steve, you know, I really do appreciate all you guys.
Well, thank you, fearless leader. Thank you.
Okay. So our inspiration for today, I thought I'd go to Rudy Giuliani because he basically really cleaned up New York. And he is an American politician, attorney, and public speaker who acts as an attorney for President Donald Trump. Politically first a Democrat, and then an independent in the 1970s, and a Republican since the 1980s, Giuliani served as the United States Associate Attorney General from 1981 to 83. That year, he became the United States Attorney for its Southern District in New York, holding the position until 1989. He served as the 107th mayor of New York City from 1994 to 2001. He was born in 1944. And he said, obviously, murder and graffiti are two vastly different crimes, but they are part of the same continuum. And a climate that tolerates one is more likely to tolerate the other. Now, Steve, I found that pretty amazing because we're seeing a lot of writing on buildings, destruction of property. And Rudy Giuliani, I think he's making the case really for more for law and order and for respect of private property. Steve, what's your thoughts? And then I'll go to Alan.
Well, you're going to touch on this eventually. Maybe a lot of people or maybe this might ring some note of familiarity. But it went on to become known as broken windows policy. And I dare not go into why I know about this or lose all credibility. But the point being made is that you tolerate low-level things, it's going to lead to a toleration of more and more and more broad-brush things, things of more significance. So why not attempt to pull down this plague that was hitting not just New York, but several major metropolitan cities.
Well, you know, I have been in the women's clothing business for many years, and I used to go back to New York on a regular basis. And I remember being in New York, it would have been in the 90s, and Central Park, it used to be a place where you would not go at night. And Giuliani actually really got that cleaned up. And to Steve's point, of if you tolerate X here, then it seems to lead to other things. Alan, I see that playing out in our society now. So we tolerated, you know, destruction of property. Now we're taking down statues, taking down history. Where does it stop? And so I think that and Steve alluded to it, to the broken window theory, is you need to stop the low-level crimes. Otherwise, it's just going to escalate, Alan.
Certainly, it comes back to one of the founding principles of our country is you have to have rule of law. And if you're not going to have laws and enforce them, then what's the point of having that law in the first place? So,
you know, and one thing, when you bring up rule of law, we talk about that, and that is a bedrock of America. However, every law and every rule, every regulation, every city ordinance needs to cut the mustard of the vision of the Declaration that all men are created equal and that everyone has these God-given rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So when you start to put in place laws that don't match up with that, those are not constitutional. Now, I know that, you know, there's supposed to be protections to then go to the courts, but we've seen this movement over the last 100 years towards, quote-unquote, a living constitution and courts that interpret a living constitution. And so then what happens is we put in place laws that can stomp all over life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and that's not okay.
We've even seen police chiefs rank laws and say, we're going to enforce these ones, but these down here aren't so important, we're not going to enforce them. And how is that right or acceptable for citizens to have to, one, look up the police chief and their stance on how they're going to criminalize a law or not, and then have to look up every single ordinance in any city they travel, the local state code, and then finally go, man, I'm just trying to wear my clothes and walk down a street. Right. What can I possibly be doing wrong? It is wrong.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, I think that we have an opportunity right now. I was with some friends on Friday for lunch, and we were talking about President Trump. And one of my friends, she said, I like some of the things he does. I don't like some of the things that he does. But what I have to give him credit for is that he has brought clarity to these issues. So, Steve, you know, people that have said that we love peace and we love love and we are tolerant and we are inclusive and we care about the little guy. Well, we're seeing not so much. And so, you know, I think what has happened with Trump is it really has brought clarity to and really kind of brought out, you know, this far left activist side that has taken over the Democrat Party. Steve, your thoughts?
Well, you spotted it already. And if I could just share this real quick. It came from Commentary Magazine, and it's alarming to a degree because it basically sets in motion a question. How far will we go? He calls it the Great Unraveling. Across the United States, a great unraveling is in progress. A rolling crime wave under the guise of social activism has left city after American city shattered and smoldering. Armed anarchists seized territory inside Seattle with the blessing of the local government. In Minneapolis and other cities, a campaign to enfeeble or eliminate the police has gained full legitimacy. In Kentucky, the governor has vowed to provide free health care only to one racial group. In the private sector, companies such as Uber Eats has pledged their commitment to a policy of race-conscious discrimination as well. And major media organs sanction all of the above as both proper and good. So, where does that stop?
Well, and continuing on with this piece that Patty had found from Commentary, it says, the unraveling goes further still. Social justice mobs have taken aim at freedom of expression, inventing new heresies daily and ruining the lives of those who unwittingly give voice to them. Forced confessions and language prescriptions are the order of the day. Poetry, fiction, movies, and television shows, including children's cartoons, are canceled and excised from history. Indeed, all art and opinion are now subject to the chopping block, lest they prove insufficiently propagandistic. And so let's go to break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about this toppling of these statues that we're seeing here in America. It's, you know, Alan, I remember when the Taliban was taking, architecture and you know, just destroying old ancient architecture, and I'm thinking they're just destroying history. This is not okay, and here it is happening in our country. So we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners, and they said, we know how hard this time apart has been, but we know not everybody is ready to join them just yet. So they still have delivery, takeout, and minimal contact curbside service at all their Hooters restaurants. There's 5 locations: Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. They are open for dine-in, to-go, delivery, and minimal contact curbside service. Happy hour is Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m., dine-in only. Wednesdays are Wings Day, all-you-can-eat wings for $15.99. They have lunch specials every day. And when you order dine-in or to-go, kids can eat free. So go to order.hooters.com for more information. That's order.hooters.com for more information. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
It's summertime, 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 summertime.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well, and be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like. We'd greatly appreciate that. Alan Thomas in studio. He's written a very important piece, The Scary History of Qualified Immunity, and we'll get to that in the third and fourth segment. But as we're going through the headlines that Patty has highlighted here, there's a couple. One from The Federalist. It says, protesters topple George Washington in Portland, continuing the purge. And The Daily Wire says that rioters tear down the statue of Francis Scott Key, who wrote the Star-Spangled Banner. Now, You know, it's amazing to me that people don't understand the whole story. We've got the New York Times that's starting to push the 1619 Project, which basically kind of negates the founding of America in 1776 and what really happened in 1776. For the first time ever in the history of mankind, there was this country that was founded on this idea that all men are created equal, with these rights given by God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, it's really dishonest, I think, Alan Thomas, for this narrative to not acknowledge that, first of all, what an amazing idea that was, and then to acknowledge that at that time, slavery was prevalent throughout the world. And somebody said, I can't remember who it was, that Britain had had 1,000 years to try to get rid of slavery. France had had 800 years to try to get rid of slavery. You had, in Africa, you had black-on-black slavery. And so it's amazing that within, we were founded in, what, 1776, and in, what was it, 18, when did the Civil War start? Was it 1861, 62, something like that? I should know that. But, you know, like 1860-ish, within basically two generations, we went to war to answer that question, and we don't seem to get any credit with these people that are tearing everything up. What do you think, Alan?
Well, and one of the great ironies is they were defacing the statue of General Grant, who literally fought against the Confederacy and won a war to end slavery. And it's disingenuous at the high human cost that this country fought to abolish this idea. And one of the great ironies is a slaveholder penned the words that led to the eventual abolition of slavery. It's beautiful and poetic that our country was founded on such a high premise and high ideal that we can continually strive for that and should continue to strive for that today. We haven't reached the mark that those founding fathers wrote for us in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence, and it's something we should definitely not remove statues and forget our history, because if we forget our history, we'll inevitably repeat it.
Well, and somebody sent me an article on one of the rioters or people pulling down statues. They were talking about, or I think they were going to take down a Churchill statue. And they asked about, you know, what do you think about that? And she didn't even know who Winston Churchill was. And so once all these, you know, these statues are gone, they're there for a conversation. And they are part of a history. And if you don't learn your history, then, you know, what kind of foundation do you have? And so I feel, you know, Alan, we're in this big battle of ideas right now. And as my friend said on Friday, it's bringing clarity to these ideas. And you know, Lincoln said, a house divided cannot stand. Christ also said that, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so we're seeing that ideologies, are we going to work towards this idea that all men are created equal with life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? Or are we going to define people by groups and instead of the individual? And so will we strive for a high ideal, or are we going to destroy and be destructive? And I think we have a stark choice in front of us. A lot of people are afraid to really talk about it, but that's the choice in front of us, Alan.
And like we said before, ideas have consequences. And honestly, by destroying history, you destroy some of the great heroes that we've had. You don't have heroes without villains, and you don't have light without darkness. So how can we celebrate some of the great heroes who fought for the equality of people if we're going to destroy their history and the causes that they fought for?
Well, and Alan, I really think that this is a product of our education system. Which we, you know, and it's been a long time in coming, Steve. You and I, well, I hate to, you're much older than I am, but I remember when we used to have George Washington. We celebrated George Washington's birthday. We celebrated Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Then it became President's Holiday. And this has been going on, I think, for a long time, kind of these little chinks to try to take down our history. And now we have kids that don't even understand, you know, what our history is. I wanted to ask you about this. So this, okay, you comment on that, and then I had another thing I wanted to say.
Well, I just remember the little industrial, now Rust Belt town that I grew up in Pennsylvania. We had the elementary buildings were named the Washington Building, the Lincoln Building. You know, mm-hmm. So there you go. And Alan, you know this. In the last 6 months, I have been watching all this upheaval and thinking, what do these people want? I look at the very first sentence or two of the preamble to the Constitution, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. We're not there yet. We're not perfect. And you know, I don't think anybody, you know, looking forward or backwards would say, yes, we at one point we were perfect. But what do these people want? If they get what they're aiming for or appear to be aiming for, are they ready for that? I don't think they understand what they're going to get.
Well, I was talking with some people this weekend, and they said that in CHOP, you know, which is the Capitol Hill Occupy protest, I think, that is in Seattle, that someone was shot there, I think, on Thursday night, and they wouldn't let the police in to help this kid. I want to say it was like, like late teens or early 20s. And so the person died. And the other thing I find so interesting about CHOP is that it has borders. If you'll notice, they set up borders. The other thing I wanted to say about borders was during the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption on the lockdown, at that point in time, all these bureaucrats liked to have borders. They said, stay in your house. So what do you think about that, Alan?
Well, going back to CHOP, it's crazy. They're resegregating. I saw a recent article that said that they African-Americans only want to be treated by African-American doctors. And it's mind-boggling about how far we're starting to regress with some of these outlandish identity politics ideas that they're starting to enforce in this autonomous zone. And it's scary that people believe in it.
Well, I think one of the positives is we are getting to watch what happens with that. And I think it's a good thing that we're seeing what's happening. Steve, that reminds me, though, talking about history. You know, I went to Normandy in 2016 with a group that took four D-Day veterans back to Normandy for the celebrations, the 72nd, and returned back realizing that we needed to tell these stories. And so I've had the great honor to interview over 130 World War II veterans and other veterans as well. And I was speaking at a junior high school here in the metro area about entrepreneurship and started to talk about that particular radio show and mentioned Normandy. And I said, how many of you have heard of D-Day? Not one hand went up. I said, how many of you have seen Private Ryan? Like a couple of hands went up. And so when we talk about our history and that our kids do not know what D-Day was, and that was where the Allies, the Americans, got a toehold on the European continent to start to fight back against Hitler, and they didn't know that. And Steve, you said you saw a post from one of your schoolmates from when you were a kid about his dad.
Yeah, he had graduated a year before me, but his post to his now deceased father was that he was quite the authoritarian, and he ran his house, you know, in a certain way. But he always had our back. But his thing in, his most outstanding memory of his government military service was the fact that he was a Higgins boat pilot driver. What do you do with a Higgins?
It's a pilot,
boat?
Yeah.
Pilot. But he made 14 trips from ship to shore that day, round trips. And I can't even imagine making one, but 14 trips, round trips. And I think as we have come to learn, some of those trips, the return trips included, you know, they were already starting to load up the wounded to take them back to the ships.
Well, I hadn't really thought about that, Alan. And I interviewed, two of the guys that we went to Normandy with. One was Frank DeVita, who was a ramp operator on a Higgins boat, first wave. And another was Joe Shida, who was a Higgins boat pilot. And I hadn't really thought about it, but as Steve just mentioned with his colleague there, that you know, they went in on that first wave, and they carried about 30 guys on these Higgins boats, and Frank said that when they got, you know, were coming into shore, the Germans had their guns on, you know, and they could hear them. And interestingly, the Higgins boats, the sides were made out of wood. The only thing that was metal was the ramp. And Frank said that he could hear the German machine guns, the bullets hitting that ramp, and he knew when he let down that ramp that those guys were going to be sitting ducks. And so he got the order to let the ramp down, and he said he didn't do it. And he's 17 years old, if you can believe it. And so he got the next order, and he didn't do it. And then with great fervor, it says, you know, lower the ramp, and he did. And out of those 30, only three guys made it to the shore. And he made a number of trips back and forth, and Steve just alluded to it, and I hadn't thought about it, is they do the first wave, they go back, and they get more guys. And then they started to, you know, bring the guys in, load the dead and wounded in the Higgins boat, take them back. Those guys on the boats took those bodies and those wounded off, and then they got in those boats, and they went in. And by the end of D-Day, June 6, 1944, we had a toehold on the European continent to fight back against tyranny. So we do this show because it's a battle of ideas. Those guys did that. We have to engage in this battle of ideas, and that's why we do this show, Alan.
I mean, the bravery incarnate in so many of them, and so many times, I'm sure you've seen this, you try and thank a veteran for their service and just the sacrifice they've made for this country, and they say, I was just doing my job. I was you know, just serving my country. And we owe our veterans so much more than we could possibly ever give them back.
And on that point, I'm going to be doing a couple of interviews tomorrow. One, 95-year-old George Champa, he was on the grave detail. So that's going to be really interesting. But another is a Vietnam veteran. He says, so many people now come up and say, thank you for your service. And he said, actually, I would recommend to them to say, thank you for my freedom. I'm like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. So, okay, we're going to go to break in just a minute. Before we do that, though, Jason McBride, I think that's a great idea to say thank you for our freedom. What do you think of that?
I think I'm wondering who hasn't been doing that.
No, we've been saying thank you for your service. And he says, actually say thank you for my freedom. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, we could certainly try that as well.
Yep. So
I think it's good. You know, your guest mentioned, the veterans, you know, barely want to accept the compliment. They seem embarrassed to be getting thanked most of the time because they figure that was just their job to do. But we should do it anyway.
We certainly should. So did you have a good Father's Day?
I did have a good Father's Day. Now, it wasn't all party. You know, I had to do some fatherly work around the house and on the cars and this and that. But, yeah, my kids and my wife made sure later in the day it was a really good Father's Day. We had some good food, good drink, and good time together.
That's awesome. And, you know, I'm not taking this stuff for granted anymore, Jason. You know, I took for granted that we could go to church. I had taken a lot of stuff for granted. And I'm not taking these great little moments in life for granted anymore. So, but I haven't even paid attention to what the futures are looking. What's the market doing right now?
Well, it's trying to get back what we gave back on Friday. Friday was a little bit disappointing, Kim. We started off pretty strong with the Dow up over 400 early. We kind of faded throughout the day and ended up at a 200-point loss. Now, Friday was triple witching when a lot of the options and futures expire.
Okay.
And oftentimes we'll see bigger volume and some volatility on a triple witching day, so that may have had something to do with it. This morning, the futures on the Dow are up about 200 points right now. Kind of interesting, the airline stocks are taking it in the shorts here. American Airlines is down about 7% in the pre-market because they announced plans to raise money through selling stock and selling bonds, and you know, the shutdown has affected them to where they need to raise some money here.
Mm-hmm.
So that stock's getting hit and taking some of the other airlines and travel-related stocks with it. But we will see what happens with the entire market by the end of the day. And if they need to pull in some money, I guess that's what they need to do. And that's one of the things that's great about the stock market and capitalism. It does allow companies to to ask investors to invest, and they can choose to do so or not.
And that really is one of the great things about America, is the fact that everyday people, the middle class, can actually buy ownership in companies that they think, you know, for some reason, or of course, a mutual fund is a group of companies, but that they can, you know, kind of hitch their star to that. They can look at the management. Of course, you know, that's what you do, is help people with that, is look at management, you know, look at the market environment, and then decide to take a chance. And it's one of the things that's actually created wealth for a lot of people. There's risk. That's why people should sit down with you and your colleagues at Presidential to kind of assess where their risk is and how they can get their economic well-being to the point that they want it to be, Jason.
Well, that's very true, Kim. We like to say you're investing so you can have a paycheck in retirement, or I even heard one fellow at one time refer to it as a playcheck, because you're going to be retired and now it's time to go play.
Sounds like a plan. So Jason McBride, if people want to reach out to you, phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or we've got this great landing page together with all kinds of your podcasts and all kinds of stuff at airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. Jason, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, Kim, have a great show.
Thanks so much. And Alan Thomas is in studio with me. He's an author, a millennial, and he has done some research on qualified immunity that I hadn't really looked at it that way, so you will not want to miss this. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Oh, Charlie, you did such a great job. It's summertime. So welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like. And there's just all kinds of information there. So, Alan Thomas, you have written a very important piece, which we'll, I'm going to check and see if it's on the website yet. It'll be there a little bit later. The Scary History of Qualified Immunity. So take us through this.
So it's probably not hard to imagine the inspiration for this piece. You know, when I decided to sit down and watch all 9 minutes of the video of a police officer kneeling on the neck of a handcuffed man on the ground, it really made me think, what brazen confidence did this police officer have in broad daylight, while obviously being filmed? Did he feel the confidence to use this excessive force against a U.S. citizen? And it really made me question a lot of things, because like many people, the last thing I wanted to do was to vilify good police officers. I grew up with them in my church, and it just made me wonder, in these two words, qualified immunity, just kept popping up. And so when you start to pull on that string, I became principally horrified at my ignorance on the issue of qualified immunity, what it was, where it came from. To me, it was just this good idea that protected good police officers. But there's really three aspects to it that constitutionally principled people can really get behind. One is the philosophical origin, the origination of it within our American courts, and then this clearly established constitutional right test that's used to see whether qualified immunity applies. So the philosophical origin of qualified immunity is rooted in the even greater idea of sovereign immunity, which, as we know, Americans fought a war against the divine right of kings, this sovereign immunity that the king or the government can do no wrong because they have the will of God behind them. So qualified immunity is a subsect of that. It's rooted in English common law. So the fact that we're even talking about it is a little scary because our founders fought a war against it. The origination of it in our American court, the one thing my blood started boiling about it is it was invented by the Supreme Court. There's no legislation about qualified immunity. In fact, qualified immunity undoes a very good piece of legislation called the Civil Rights Act of 1871. In that Civil Rights Act, you're able to bring civil suit against government agents who violate your constitutional rights. And in 1967, the Supreme Court ruled in a case and completely invented this idea of qualified immunity out of nowhere.
1967.
And within the next 15 years, they slowly started, as most constitutional ideas go, they created these constitutional tests. And one of the constitutional tests to decide whether qualified immunity applies is this idea of a clearly established constitutional right. Now, you and I would sit here and we would hear clearly established constitutional right. Seems pretty easy. You have your Bill of Rights, you have your Constitution, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. However, that's not what it means. A clearly established constitutional right means you had to have had a case decided against this particular conduct or particular context and particular conduct. So let me give you another quick example, because it's kind of hard to wrap your brain around it. So imagine you send your kids into the backyard with some of their friends, right? You have six kids in the backyard, the family dog, it's fenced in. You're thinking, my kids are safe, they're having fun. Well, the police were pursuing a suspect, a criminal. He jumps your fence, and the police follow right after him. The police ordered all the kids to get down on the ground. They had their guns drawn. They're following a criminal, obviously. The kids complied. They all got down on the ground, and the family dog is among all the kids. And the police officer starts firing at this family dog. And the courts later said that the dog posed no risk. So the police officer missed the dog by over a foot and a half and strikes your 10-year-old kid in the knee. Now, obviously, you want to be able to say that was completely unreasonable. That was excessive, that you had no reason to be shooting anywhere near my children in my yard, laying on the ground, posing no threat. I'm a complete innocent victim in this. And so what the Civil Rights Act of 1871 says is I can take this police officer to civil court and say, you owe me for the orthopedic bill. You owe me for all of this wrong that my kid's life is now changed because his knee is gone. The courts agreed that that the constitutional right was violated in this case.
And that was what, year 1867?
Oh, no, this was very recent. This was, I think, within the past 15 years.
Okay. Now, so, is this a real case that you
this
just...
This is a real case, yes.
You're telling me about a real case?
This is a real case. And the courts agreed that the constitutional right was violated. However, because there was not previous cases involving a 10-year-old's kid, a 10-year-old's leg being shot, while the police were shooting at a suspect, they dismissed it because the child's right to not be shot in the leg was not clearly established.
Oh.
So this uphill battle of a clearly established constitutional right is circular logic, right? If I haven't gotten in trouble for it in the past, then I'm not going to be able to get in trouble for it in the future. And this isn't about protecting good police officers whatsoever. This idea of qualified immunity only creates an incentive for bad police officers to continue using excessive force, and it doesn't belong in our political system.
Okay, so this thing is, I wasn't really too jazzed about this Senate Bill 2217, which, you know, Colorado's getting a whole lot of press about this, and this was in response to George Floyd's death, and the qualified immunity. I'm thinking, well, we don't want to let our good police officers be sued. But what you're saying is really the qualified immunity has protected bad police officers. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yes. Yeah. So that the
and,
whole
and
idea
I would
of,
say it's a small amount. Every profession has some bad apples, and in every profession, it's typically a small percentage. But what we're saying is qualified immunity has been protecting that small percentage. Yes?
Right. Yes. I mean, the Civil Rights Act of 1871, the Ku Klux Klan Act is the nickname for it, basically allowed citizens to use the civil court to hold public officials who break the law accountable and to make themselves whole through the civil courts, right?
And then in 1967,
the Supreme Court just said, here's qualified immunity, we're going to start applying it, and it's created this huge disincentive, and it's really fostered mistrust towards public officials,
okay,
specifically our police. And as we know, community trust, if you don't have it, it makes policing way more difficult and way more dangerous if the community doesn't trust the police officers who are supposed to be there to protect all of our constitutional rights.
So how does the police union play into this, Alan Thomas?
They use qualified immunity, I'm sure, it's a protection against using excessive force. And the police unions are kind of the other foot on the same subject of protecting bad police officers, basically making it very difficult to fire bad police officers in the same way the teachers union protects bad teachers, right? And they create these huge loops and steps and processes you have to go to get rid of bad teachers. The police union does the same thing to protect its own, which unfortunately, you know, police are the legalized use of force. They're government actors. The government is the only legal use of force in this country, and to not hold them accountable or to not allow them to be held accountable is a scary thought.
Okay, Alan, but what I see as a problem then is that unless we have tort reform, so right now in America, anybody can accuse anybody of anything, and you have to lawyer up, you know, one would have to lawyer up to protect oneself. And so it could bankrupt a police officer, or it could bankrupt a teacher. So unions have stepped in and they've said, you know, we will provide insurance for you if you are accused of something. Now, if you are, my understanding is, and I think I saw this here as well, is that if you are convicted as a bad actor on that, then the insurance would not, you know, we wouldn't pay. But if in fact you were not found guilty, then there's insurance over here that would protect you. And that's been one of the, I think, the arguments for people joining a teachers union or a police union. So if we get rid of qualified immunity, then it seems to me like there could be all kinds of frivolous cases that would also be filed. So what do you think about that?
So this is something I had the same exact question, you know, and of course the litigious culture is something we could definitely talk about at a different time. But qualified immunity doesn't protect against frivolous lawsuits. The lawyeries, the court speak, they dismiss the cases that are meritless through different avenues. Qualified immunity only kicks in on cases that have merit. So qualified immunity has never gotten rid of frivolous lawsuits. Qualified immunity is only applicable when the case has merit.
Okay.
So it doesn't protect against frivolous lawsuits at all.
Okay, interesting. Okay, you know what? Let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show. We're talking with Alan Thomas regarding his op-ed, which will be on my website a little bit later today, The Scary History of Qualified Immunity. Very important piece. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur, She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
The summer wind came blowing in.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. Appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like. And one thing that I had not mentioned yet, and that is, well, first of all, tonight I'm so excited we are sold out for our three punches to knock down democratic socialism. But Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas are, they have a new show on KLZ 560 on Sunday afternoons, are working on the minority bus tour. They're raising money for their I'm a Trumpster bus that they're going to take into minority communities try to move the needle towards Donald Trump in this next election. We are helping them with the vinyl wrap around the bus that's going to say I'm a Trumpster, and we need to do it grassroots. And so go to I'm a Trumpster, imatrumpster.com, and contribute. And then email me over at kim@kimmunson.com and let me know that you have done that. For every $50, you will get a battle mask. We are going to have a celebration. We thought we'd have it this week, but we're going to have it after the 4th of July. But my friends, these guys are stepping forward, and we need to lean into them and help them with that as well. In studio with me is Alan Thomas, who's written a piece, The Scary History of Qualified Immunity. And I found it really interesting that there was the Civil Rights Act in 1871. It was called the Ku Klux Klan Act, which would allow citizens to hold all government actors liable within civil court for constitutional rights violations. And then in 1967, the Supreme Court kind of turned that on its head. And so what's the next thing we want to talk about here on qualified immunity, Alan?
Well, you had brought up the fear of police officers being sued and protecting good police officers. And of course, the argument is qualified immunity does that. So what happened prior to 1967 is there's a very established precedent in court law for deference towards police officers making split second decisions, right? I mean, you and I both know it should be it's a brave job. I mean, you face very difficult, impossible situations where life and death are on the line. And police officers were very protected and would continue to be protected by this idea of objectionable reasonableness, which is, again, highly deferential to on-the-spot decision-making and doesn't look at the 2020 hindsight, the Monday morning quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, now we have all the facts. What should you have done? It really factors into what police saw at that time and the reasonableness of their good faith actions. So qualified immunity doesn't protect police officers against that. Like I said, a lot of the, if you look at many of these cases, the appellate and even the Supreme Court agrees that a constitutional right was violated, but since they can't find previous cases with that particular force or that particular conduct, they protect the government agent from being civilly liable in many of these cases. And secondly, being civilly liable, one of the other problems facing many of these police forces is nearly always police are always indemnified and their employers end up paying their fines either through the unions, the way they're protected that way. One article said that the government paid approximately 99.98% of all civil cases where a police officer was found civilly liable. So would police fear being sued if we abolished qualified immunity? No more than they already are. What this is, and if I could touch on the history of the Ku Klux Klan Act, it really had its origination in the fact that the Ku Klux Klan was a very national organization. And if you were an African-American or an African-American sympathizer in that time, and these people showed up in white hoods and decided they wanted to burn your house down, steal your things, or even more worse, if they wanted to rape or kill you or lynch you, you had very little in way of holding them accountable, because very often government officials, the county sheriff, the judge, were underneath those masks. So this legislation basically said, if you're a public official and you break the law and you violate someone's constitutional right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you have to pay to make them whole again. You have to be held accountable. And that accountability is something we should expect from the government, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the government should not be able to pick winners and losers, especially when it picks itself to protect itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have about five. It always goes so fast when you're here. So, okay, a couple of things. First of all, over here on Senate Bill 2217, in the bill, and I read it and I went over it with an expert last night as well, that they refer to your local law enforcement and the Colorado State Patrol, which the Colorado State Patrol protects the Capitol. They're answerable to the governor. And so basically, throughout the bill, they refer to both of them, except when you get to qualified immunity. And this is 1321.131. And in that, they take out, they only say employed by a local government, and they don't include the Colorado State Patrol, which is answerable to the governor. And so if we take away qualified immunity for these officers, why wouldn't you do it for those officers as well? I find that very curious, Alan Thomas.
Again, it's the government picking winners and losers again in this case, you know. And the other thing with it, not only does it protect the Colorado State Patrol, it protects other bureaucrats. It protects government agents. So the Civil Rights Act, it goes beyond police officer. It goes to Child Protective Services, the CDPHE, the IRA, the DEA, the ATF. If any of them...
So it protects all the bureaucrats.
It protects all the bureaucrats and the bureaucratic agencies. And we should just be horrified by the fact that if the ATF wanted to show up at my house and pump it full of tear gas, and it's unlivable for 2 months, since there's no previous case law involving tear gas, they wouldn't have to pay a thing.
But if they did not have qualified immunity, the fact that they had come in and taken, you know, basically property, because you were not able to use your property, then you would have a case and it might make them more accountable. So I think maybe the circle I'm getting in, the court in 1967, we know what was going on in America. It was in total upheaval. A very bad choice, I think, was made that actually then protects many potential bad things happening out there. Okay, I've got just a question. Okay, with this whole government shutdown, people's life, their liberty, their livelihoods have been taken, their property's been taken. And maybe we shouldn't have qualified immunity for the bureaucrats at these health departments, because they really have hurt a lot of people. You know, we've seen businesses closing up. We're seeing businesses that won't reopen. Now, I don't know if that's a stretch or not. You want to bite that off, Alan Thomas?
I would argue that it is, and I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but it sure would be a shame if they were protected by qualified immunity for destroying small businesses, for harassing small business owners, as we've seen with our friend Jennifer Hulin and what she had to go through there. Just the general harassment and just absolute decimation of our rights. It's scary, and we should want accountability in our government officials. And this isn't a government where we're being told and dictated what to do. It's we the people. Mm-hmm. And this is one way to bring accountability back. And honestly, to reinstall trust in our police force. Mm-hmm. Because if the public knows they're going to be held accountable for excessive abuse of power, and they know they have a way to hold them accountable, they're going to trust the police force so much more, and it'll make police be able to do their jobs much better.
Okay, so my brain is headed over to all these mayors of these blue cities that have not stood to actually protect people's property. They should maybe not have qualified immunity as well. And, you know, we're in this big ideological battle, and it's one of lifting people up or tearing people down. And we can't, and Lincoln said this, you cannot make the weak strong by weakening the strong. Am I getting that? You cannot make the weak strong by trying to, you know, make the strong less weak or weak. Am I making any sense? I'm trying
to. You absolutely are.
Okay.
You don't build something up by tearing it down, right?
Exactly. And so instead of tearing everything down, we should be working to build everybody up. And so I think this whole qualified immunity, you really piqued my interest on this, and you really changed my mind on it, Alan Thomas.
Well, and I encourage everyone to do their research into it. Really look into it and open your mind and try and, if you even still disagree with me, that's fine. The Cato Institute actually has a really good website, Unlawful Shield, where they really delve into this really strong and go into a lot of different cases and explain them. So do your research, have the conversations, and you know, let's take steps towards freedom.
Absolutely. And let's build people up instead of trying to tear things down. Steve, do you have a final thought on any of this? We have about 30 seconds.
Well, I don't know. I have a very close family member who is in law enforcement, and we've been discussing this over the last couple of weeks, especially with the here at home issues in our own state house. And I don't know. I just sometimes I get the feeling that he is just basically overwhelmed with it, that there is no real solid support, that his support could go away in the blink of an eye.
Yes. And so we really want to support our good police officers. And I think this qualified immunity, I think that we actually need to be holding everybody accountable instead of picking winners and losers. Alan Thomas, thank you so much for being in studio with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Really important piece. And so check out my website. It'll be there a little bit later today. Rudy Giuliani said this. He said, the sky's the limit for all Americans if we have the right kind of leadership. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. This great unknown, and I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive, I was born free, I was born free, I was born free. The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.